Life's an adventure, and it's waiting. Hi, this is Merrill Hodge. At S&T Bank, they know life's for the living. That's why S&T Bank offers solutions to help you get the most out of it. Whether you're investing in your home, planning for the future, or just making the most of every day, S&T Bank is here to help. Learn how S&T Bank can help you live the life you want at stbank.com. Member FDIC. S&T Bank was ranked number one in customer satisfaction with retail banking in Pennsylvania by J.D. Power. For J.D. Power 2022 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards.
Welcome back. I'm Dale Lally here with Matt Williamson. We are live from Steelers OTA sessions here at the UPMC Rooney Sports Complex. It's not a bad day today.
It's a
little overcast. We get some light sprinkles earlier there, but
yeah, I was a little worried the skies were going to open up on us, and it didn't happen.
Yeah, it's kind of made it a nice and cool day, and so the Steelers getting through their practice today. Matt, anything stand out to you today?
Nothing jumps out at me. I mean, you could tell that there's a lot, and this isn't unusual, but there is a lot of time spent one-on-one, position coach and usually one of the better players.
Here's something I saw today I thought was interesting. So they had all the guys on offensive players who play on special teams.
Okay.
And in one of the early sessions, they hit Brian Flores in the drill session, drilling with those guys who are special teams players.
Really?
On how to force fumbles.
Wow. Okay. A little cross-pollination there.
Yeah.
And I wonder, did Flores do that as Miami's head coach, or is that a Patriot thing?
Well, I mean, he had been a special teams guy, I think.
Right. You know. That makes perfect sense, though. I mean, I'm sure Danny Smith can help offensive players cause fumbles, but a defensive coach would be even better.
Right.
You know what I mean?
The guy
it
who
makes
does
perfect
this,
sense,
yeah.
Right. That is interesting. I mean, I think cross-pollination in coaching and even, like, scouts to coaches and things like that is really important. I keep citing the Patriots, but that they're big on that, too. Like,
well, they're really big on it this year.
They have defensive coordinators
maybe
calling the plays.
Right. We haven't talked a lot about that.
I don't know how that's going to work out.
Yeah. I'm going to call up the Patriots coaching staff here.
Well, from what I understand, Matt Patricia is back with the team. I guess he was an offensive lineman who immediately went to the defensive side of the ball and his coaching staff. Former Lions head coach after being the defensive coordinator
for
the Patriots.
That didn't work out so well.
No, I thought he was a horrible head coach. Supposedly he's very bright and, you know, gets good grades and book smart and, you know, good SATs and things like that. But he's going to be instrumental in the offensive play calling from what I understand. And I guess Belichick is too, which I'm sure he knows plenty, but it's not his forte.
Here's their offensive coaching staff. Ivan Fears is the running back coach. He's been in the league 31 years.
Okay.
Vinny Sinceri is the assistant running back coach. Actually, they have two running backs coach. You list them both. And he has been with 5 years. That's Sal's kid.
Yeah.
Troy Brown is the wide receiver, kick returner coach.
Makes sense. That's a typical, he'll be the next Vrabel, you know.
Yeah. Tight ends, fullbacks is Nick Cayley, who has 7 years of experience. Assistant offensive line coach is Billy Yates, who has 12 years experience, and the offensive assistant is Joe Judge.
Right, also a former head coach.
Another Patriot former head coach.
Failed head coach.
Okay, so I see what I see on here is an assistant offensive line coach, but no offensive line coach.
I was going to say, Skarnecki is not there anymore.
Right,
he's
retired. But they didn't name Yates the head offensive line coach.
It's weird how they handle their
titles, too. There's no quarterbacks coach.
There's no quarterbacks coach, right.
And there's no offensive coordinator.
And there's no offensive coordinator.
But you have Troy Brown coaching your kick returners.
So, I mean, over the last couple years, you lose Skarnecki, who's like a Hall of Fame offensive line coach, if there is such a thing. McDaniels, who's one of the best offensive coordinators in the league. Oh, by the way, Tom Brady's gone. And you have defensive-minded guys.
You lost guys like Brian Flores.
Yeah, absolutely. You get Patricia and Judge back after failed stints as head coaches, but obviously they
hugely failed
coaches. But they were obviously sought up enough to interview for head coaching jobs at one point. You know, they're probably, I wouldn't qualify them the same way as I qualify the Flores hiring.
Here's the other side of the ball.
I don't think Flores was a failed head coach.
Defensive line is DeMarcus Covington, been 5 years. Inside linebackers is Jared Mayo.
He has a very good reputation.
Yeah.
He's a good player. Yeah.
Okay. Your outside linebackers coach is Steve Belichick.
I wanted to bring that up, right.
Your safeties coach is Brian Belichick.
Oh, I didn't know there was yet another Belichick.
There's two. Yeah, he's got two of his sons on the staff. Okay. Quarterback coach is Mike Pellegrino, and then they've got Ross Douglas on the staff as a NFL coaching fellowship defense.
Okay.
He's got a tiny staff.
He's got a tiny staff with all his big dogs gone.
It's all on Bill now.
It's all on Bill. And I don't think Bill's slipping by any means. I mean, I think he's been an overrated GM for a while. But, I mean, in terms of football knowledge,
Bill the
great.
Coach could make up for Bill the GM's.
Right, especially with TB12.
Yeah.
But I think they have a chance to be exposed on a couple levels. First of all, calling plays, not that I've ever done it, for an offense is a very high-tempo, stressful job that doesn't come overnight. Yeah. Not necessarily like, should I call this run or this pass? I mean, just communicating it to all that need to get it onto the field.
Ahead,
with
you're playing chess.
Right. Playing ahead, setting things up, knowing your team's weaknesses, adjusting on the fly. But I also wonder, and Steve Belichick, who, you know, they've shown on the sidelines many times, he's got the mullet, he makes Gruden faces, and he's, you know, he's Bill's kid. Makes me wonder, is his role on the defense growing because dad's coaching the offense? And is Steve ready for it?
I mean, right.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But it's a lot of change.
His last name is Belichick, but that doesn't mean he
inherited the football knowledge. Exactly, right. I mean, you don't want Fredo running the running the Corleone family either. But I don't know.
Smart? I can do more. I'm smart.
So, you're right. I didn't realize the staff was that small. And
it is a tiny staff. You know, they got
by
two,
design, I'm sure.
They got two special teams guys, Cameron Accord and Joe Houston.
I guarantee they'll be good on special teams. That's a rock
ball. So you got a special teams coordinator and special teams assistant, but you don't have an offensive coordinator or a defensive coordinator.
Which is weird. Or an O-line coach. Or a quarterback coach.
Or a quarterback's coach.
Probably the four most valuable assistant coaches.
And then you get your senior football advisor, Matt Patricia.
Okay, and he'll do a bunch of stuff, of course, but I think he's going to be on the offense.
Which is...
Yeah. I don't see any offensive masterminds there.
I don't either. And as
or
good
experienced
as,
ones.
As good as Belichick is, that's not his forte.
No.
And if he's also calling the defenses, which he largely does, although Mayo and Steve Belichick do a lot of that,
I assume they're
going
to get more.
But Belichick has a big hand in that.
Oh, yeah. Game planning and all that stuff, too.
Can he do both? Can he, okay, I'm going to game plan the offense here, and I'm going to game plan. Like, he's stretched thin.
How old is Bill?
He's in his 46th season in the NFL.
He's been around a while,
he's
right?
He's not a spring chicken. I think he's like almost 70.
I thought he was 70-ish, maybe even more.
It doesn't say in his bio, surprisingly enough.
I'm sure Wikipedia will tell you or whatever. But, I mean, he's not a young man. I mean, we know that.
He's 70 years old.
Okay, 70 years old.
Turned 70 April 16th.
Yeah. I mean.
This is a recipe for disaster. If this were any other team doing this.
Oh, yeah.
People would be trashing this left and right.
Yeah. Close your eyes, everyone.
If Mike Tomlin made this move with the Steelers.
Oh, yeah.
We're not going to have an offensive coordinator. I'm going to call the offensive plays.
Yep.
Or I'm going to bring back. I'm going to bring back Mike Munchak, and he's going to be a defensive coach now.
Yeah, he's coaching the corners.
I mean, that's essentially right. What this is.
It is kind of what it is. You know, like, for example, everyone out there, close your eyes and imagine this world where the Jags fire last year's disaster and take this approach. What do you think Peter King and Schefter and all the national guys would be saying? Like, is that a good idea or not? No. And no,
but everybody's just rubber stamping. Oh, it's Belichick.
Right, this is going to be good.
This will work.
Right. I mean,
plus, he's the GM.
It's the same thing as, well, Cole Strange, he knows better than I do, or Thornton, or, yeah, it was a great idea to draft two running backs and a quarterback in the mid rounds. You know, it's for your fourth and fifth running back position and backup quarterback for the guy you drafted in the first round last year. Like, their draft to me. Cole Strange is like my fourth biggest complaint because he'll be a good guard. You know,
yeah,
fine.
Right.
Okay,
he's a
know,
guard.
Right.
If they it goes him, back to the value
right,
thing.
Right, right. If they had taken him 15 picks later, nobody would have batted an eye.
Yeah.
Fine. He'll be a fine guard. But because of where they took him, they're going to kill him for it. And he's a small school guy. I mean, but some of the other draft stuff, and really going back to last offseason with the money they spent, not only on Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry, but on, like, Aguilar. You know, like, he doesn't fix your wide receiver problems. And he was like a $10 million guy. You know,
right.
Like, so
the Steelers got James Daniel for less.
Yeah, right. I mean, all the money they spent on those guys and Kendrick Bourne, and you know, like your skill positions are expensive now and bad. You know, like you went from just bad and young to expensive and bad at the skill position spots, and you don't pay in Brady now, you're paying Mac. But I thought Belichick's not his best, because I mean that's saying a lot. But did an elite job of coaching the year Brady went to Tampa, because that was the year COVID hit them unbelievably hard, you know, more than any other team in terms of opt-outs. His roster was garbage.
It was junk.
Yeah. And they were 7-9. And I'm like, I can't believe that he made.
Now, part of that was also because they get to play the Jets and the Dolphins four times.
Yeah, and they were bad teams at that point, too, you know, without a doubt. But he made a presentable meal with marshmallows, vodka, and you know, peanuts or whatever the heck it is. Right. So I feel like he's going to have to do it again.
Even more so because, as I mentioned, he's the GM as well.
That's
so
what I mean.
He's
right.
wearing like eight different hats.
He's the one shopping for the ingredients and cooking with them. And, boy, they're
he's
in a conflict
right
now.
Not just cooking. He's doing all the prep work.
Right. I really
like
feel
he's
like
he's the one chopping up the chicken to put into this, you know.
Yeah.
It's the whole deal here.
It's
he's
the
not
whole
just,
deal.
He's not just stirring the pot. He's like
he has to cut the celery too and everything. Right? Yeah. Part of me thinks, boy, Bill's still got it if he can keep them relevant and around 500. But this could be the year that they win four.
If there were any other team that did this, they would be getting crushed.
They'd be getting crushed.
But it's Belichick, so they'll be fine.
Yeah,
they'll be fine
because he's smarter than us, and he is. But there's a lot of illogical moves the last 2 years.
Yeah. You know, I'm looking at this photo here. He's got the hoodie pulled up over. He looks like the Emperor.
No, I'm sure he looks like, yes.
In Star Wars.
Big time, yeah.
And the Emperor, at some point, found out that, well.
Bench, you can't do it all, right?
Can't do it all.
Right. You know, the young up-and-comers go past you, right?
Can't control everything. I honestly think we went over your power rankings yesterday, and you had them at, what, 21 or 22?
Maybe lower. They were the fourth worst in the AFC.
Yeah.
Only the Jets, Jags, and Texans were
below. I think they're closer than that than they are the fourth best team.
Right. Oh, I do too. Yeah. 100%
way closer.
Right. I might pick them fourth in their division. If I had a little more Zach Wilson trust, I think I would.
Yeah. So, and that's not even saying that, I mean, you don't love the Dolphins either.
I know. I don't trust Tua either. I mean, honestly, not that Mac Jones is a superstar, but if he were a Dolphin or Jet, I would say that's clearly the second best team in the division.
Yeah.
You know, he's good enough.
Better rosters.
They're better rosters.
Now, they've had better rosters in the past.
Sure.
Except for Brady.
Yeah, they have.
But it's just, you know, I don't know. This is going to be fascinating to watch. And this is one, I know it's a copycat league.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see anybody copying this particular way of doing things.
No. I hope for Bill's sake and the Patriots' sake. Not why should I hope for them? They've had more success than anybody. Everyone's due for their downtime. But I could see their trajectory going a lot like Seattle's as the last couple of years. You know, like it was great. What you did worked tremendously well. Not the lucked into Russell Wilson and Brady, but you got a break there and you took massive advantage of it. But I could see those two organizations going maybe the end of the Chuck Moore era. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not saying the game's passed
Tom
you by.
Landry,
or, right. I mean, these are the best guys I've ever done.
Even Shula at the end, you know. Marino and still didn't have success.
Yeah. I mean, it's bound to happen.
Yeah.
They probably aren't going to. Yeah, you're probably not going to go out on top.
That's just the way it works. It'll be fascinating to watch. They are the one team I know when everybody brings up, why don't the Steelers have more assistant coaches? I said, you know the one team that doesn't have more assistant coaches than the Steelers consistently year in and year out? Is the Patriots.
And it's not because they're cheap. I mean, some organizations just don't want to pay 30 assistants
and
or whatever.
Some go over the top and have like 28.
Yeah.
Which you don't need a position coach for every two players.
Right.
That's insane.
I think a coach could be in charge of five guys.
Too many voices in the kitchen makes for a bad meal.
But I wonder too, I mean, just Patriots, there's a lot to do, and I'm sure they have other people involved, but preparing from week four to week five is a big job that takes a lot of manpower. And if you have less manpower than others, you know, are you watching as many third down tendencies? Or I don't know.
Your head coach also has to walk in and look at who's available as a free agent this weekend. We had three injuries.
I say Bill's got busy days. Yeah. Right. And, you know, he probably wants a nap as a 70-year-old, too, you know.
Well, he looks like he needs a nap in that photo. Anyway, we're
gonna he's got, of course, his media responsibilities and every other head coach thing that's unbelievably demanding.
Yeah.
It's just a lot.
It is a lot. We're going to take another break. He is Matt Williamson. I am Dale Lally. When we come back, we're going to hear from Mason Cole, one of the Steelers' big free agent signings this offseason.
This is good.
Yeah, we'll hear from him when we come back. You are live from the UPMC Rooney Sports Complex, where we're covering the Steelers' OTA sessions. They just finished up day three a little while ago. But Matt and I will be back with more right after this.
Life's an adventure, and it's waiting. Hi, this is Merrill Hodge. At S&T Bank, they know life's for the living. That's why S&T Bank offers solutions to help you get the most out of it. Whether you're investing in your home, planning for the future, or just making the most of every day, S&T Bank is here to help. Learn how S&T Bank can help you live the life you want at stbank.com. Member FDIC. S&T Bank was ranked number one in customer satisfaction with retail banking in Pennsylvania by J.D. Power. For J.D. Power 2022 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards.
Welcome back. I'm Dale Lally here with Matt Williamson. And Matt, earlier today, new Steelers center, Mason Cole, sat down with Shuler and Tom Opperman, who was sitting in for Arthur Motes, and did a little interview. And did want to play that back for everybody who missed that. That was way back a couple hours ago anyway. So
it's a good one. I was standing right here listening.
He's a good
I was
talker.
On the air with him. Yeah, yeah. He's intelligent. A couple things I noticed was just his body type. You know, I mean, seeing him 3 feet away
bigger,
from me.
Yeah.
I mean, he played a lot of tackle, or at least some tackle, at Michigan, and he looks more like a tackle than a Hank Fraley center. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, there's nothing short and squatty about him.
No, there's not a lot of fat on his body. He has some length. I'm excited to watch him more in terms of leverage and sinking his hips as a center. But one thing he'll say in this interview that I found interesting was obviously he's versatile, but he said his favorite spot, I'm not sure how he phrased it, I guess it's coming up.
He's most comfortable at center.
Yeah,
that's where
he's had
his most career starts. He has 39 career starts, and James Daniel has 52, I believe, 52 or 54. Mm-hmm. Chukwukorafor then has 35, and those guys are your veteran guys in that offensive line. Cole's already turned 25. Okorafor and Daniels are still both 24. Dan Moore is 23, and Kevin Dotson and Kendrick Green are splitting time at left guard, are 25 and 23.
Yeah, I can't say this enough, and I've said it over and over, that all of a sudden between those six, they have a remarkable blend of youth, experience, which those two things usually don't go hand in hand, and cost-controlled slash continuity for the future.
Yeah, Daniels told me yesterday that he started the game last year, and when I'm trying to think of who the player was, he told me, but there was a tackle, Larry Borum, moved in at right tackle for the Bears. He said that was the first time he had been on the field as a professional with somebody younger than him.
Wow.
On the offensive line.
He's been in the league a long time.
Yeah.
I think that James Daniels, and we talked about the Barnwell article to lead off the show, and I'm not picking on Bill, but you pick up, that James Daniels pickup to me could go down as one of the best for the buck, long-term signings of this entire free agency period.
And
considering his age, he's from Youngstown right around the corner. He has position versatility. A year from now, you might ask him to play center. I mean, I don't think that's the plan, but he could, you know.
Or if you had an injury in game, you could put him at center.
Right.
You can move him over.
He brings a lot to the table.
Yeah, and you know, the other great thing about it is outside of Dotson, those guys are all signed for at least the next 3 years.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, they're cost-controlled. You should develop great continuity amongst those six, and we'll see how, you know, only five of them will see the field at once. But I think it's a remarkable accomplishment and very hard to do. Now, that doesn't mean all six of them are going to be tremendous players, but how they're set up financially, age, experience-wise, is very hard to pull off.
They're all on the upswing of their career as well, as opposed to being on the downward slope.
And I mentioned continuity a ton. I mean, ask any offensive lineman, one of the most underrated aspects of great five-man offensive line play, not singular, is knowing the guys next to you. And I think that is a chance to really be a strength here.
Well, Cole will be in the middle, at least he is right now, kind of pivoting all that thing. Mm-hmm. So let's hear what Mason Cole had to say earlier today with Wes Shuler and Tom Opperman.
But sitting down with us right now, we'll go to the other side of the football. We've got Steelers' new offensive lineman, Mason Cole. sitting down with us here. If I can give you this headset there, Mason, thank you. Everything sound all right in your ears and everything?
Perfect.
Perfect. Well, welcome to Pittsburgh. What's it been like, you know, first week here in the black and gold?
It's been awesome, man. I don't know if you saw it or not, but this culture here is unbelievable, and really happy to be a part of it and hopefully win a bunch of games here.
You coming over from Minnesota, obviously. I believe it was earlier this week I heard you talking about just the stability that is Pittsburgh, and particularly throughout Mike Tomlin's tenure and the consistency of winning seasons and playoff appearances. Is that something that clearly attracted you to this place?
Yeah, for sure. And it's by no accident either, right? It doesn't just happen. Coach Tomlin's been awesome. And the culture he's built around here and the city's built is unbelievable. And to be a part of it is really special.
Mason, all five of you guys on the offensive line have to work together as one, really more so than any position on the field. How hard is that to do as a free agent coming into a new environment? Or, you know, the Steelers have a really young offensive line, or is it maybe a little easier than you thought it would be?
You know, it's not as hard as a lot of people think, but that's what this time is for.
Right.
You know, OTAs and training camp is to build that continuity with that group, learn how the guys next to you play. And I mean, that's a huge thing, right? There's five individuals on the offensive line, but we all have to play together as a unit. We have to be on the same page. We have to communicate well. But if we can do all those things, if we can communicate well and all be on the same page, then we'll be all right.
One of the things that, you know, people have been discussing ever since you signed with the Pittsburgh Steelers, your position flexibility. I know, obviously, you've played a lot of center. You played some guard last year, did really well on Thursday night against the Steelers last season, by the way.
I think
that might have been part of what put you on their radar. And then I believe at Michigan you played some tackle even as well, too, right,
yep,
when you were in college.
Yep.
Does it feel to you, though, like is center the position where you think you belong, or is that flexibility something that you're kind of willing to ride with?
Center is certainly the position I feel most comfortable just because I've started the most games there. I don't think I could play tackle on the NFL, if I'm being honest.
Different beast in college.
In an emergency situation, I could be out there and hold someone's spot. But any of the three interior spots, I feel comfortable I can play at a high level at. But I do think center is where I feel the most comfortable at. But that's just because I played there the most.
Sure.
Mason, the Steelers' run offense is going to be the bread and butter this year. That's what everybody thinks. Najee Harris, obviously a stud. I don't have to tell you that. What do you guys have to do up front to really improve the gaps that he has in front of him? What do you have to do as a unit to improve this rush offense?
You know, I think the first thing, and a lot of people may or may not know this, but schematically we have to have the right fit. And you can do a lot of things, but you have to find the thing that you're good at, whether it be inside zone, gap scheme, whatever you're good at. You got to find what's good, what you're good at, your group's good at, what Najee's good at, even though he's probably good at everything. But seriously, you got to find what works for you and what's going to be our identity. And once we establish that, then you got to roll with it. I think running the ball a lot of times is a mindset too. I think in this league you have to run the ball well to win games. In this new era of the league with all these passing and offenses and stuff, when it comes down to it, you still have to run the ball well.
Sure.
Not saying you have to get a million yards a game, but you have to run it efficiently to win football games in this league.
And probably, I would think, effectively in those big moments as well, too, when it's time to kind of close down a game and
right,
see things out.
I mean, situationally, running the football is one of the hardest things in the game. But
yeah,
to win games, you have to do that, and you have to be good in those situations.
We obviously don't know who's going to be the starting quarterback at this point yet. How do you kind of use this time and minicamp coming up and then into training camp to kind of, like, spread some experience around with all three of those guys? Because you don't know who you might be snapping the ball
right
to.
You know, I think it's good. I mean, we get reps with everyone out there.
Yeah.
We got a really good quarterback room all across the board. So, obviously that'll get sorted out whenever it gets sorted out, but it's been fun getting to know these guys and learn how they play and, learn how they communicate. And just from here on out, like I said, just this time in training camp is to get to know those guys and know how they work, know how they play. You know, you get some downtime right after the season, then you kind of get back into training come February and March. You're training hard and now we're in OTA, so we're doing a lot more football stuff. And I think as you get closer to training camp, you really got – the biggest thing is being in shape, right? You have to be in shape. And you can't be crushing the body in the weight room too much, I don't think, in late July, because you don't want to be beat up going into training camp. But being in good physical shape, I think, is huge, right? Because your body goes through a lot come training camp, and being in good shape is huge. And also taking some time off, right? You gotta learn to separate work and
recharge
and
those batteries.
And when you got some time off, 6 weeks here or whatever, at the end of the month, you need some time to get away, right? So once training camp comes, it's on for 6 months, right? Like, we have a kid. My wife and I have a kid. Almost a year and a half. And so it's been obviously amazing being in the off season now.
Spending time,
trying to get as much time with him as possible, because I know once August, especially being at Latrobe.
Absolutely.
There for 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks, however long we're there. And then you know, the season's such a grind.
Absolutely.
It's such a grind. So just being mentally prepared for that and being in the right state of mind to be ready for that grind.
Well, the grind's certainly right around the corner, but how important is an OTA session like this, especially with, you know, there's a lot of new pieces on the offensive line, you included, James Daniels included, new pieces on the defensive side. It's a very young roster overall. How important is these days here where they're voluntary, but a lot of good attendance here? Like, you guys are growing as a team, I have to imagine.
Yeah, you know, I don't think it's so much the huge football aspect of it. Like, our team stuff, we're not going, like, really full speed. And,
right.
But it's really getting with your coaches, learning their techniques, like new offensive line coach here, obviously new for me, but learning new techniques. Again, being in the same room as the whole offensive line, being in the same room as your position group, and being around the quarterbacks and running backs, and just being around the whole team. And we were just talking in there, like, there's no atmosphere in the world like an NFL locker room.
Amen.
And being in that locker room is so special. So especially on a new team with new people, so many new people this year especially, being in that locker room is huge.
Well, we really appreciate your time. I know you got a million things going on and probably meetings or other things you got to do or just getting back to that little boy in your family. Mason Cole, thank you so much for the time, and we'll talk to you soon.
Appreciate it, guys.
Thanks,
thank you.
There he is, Steelers' new offensive lineman, Mason Cole. Thanks to him for the time. We're going to take a break here. When we come back, we will continue the conversation. You got Tom and I until 1 o'clock and then 3 hours with Dale Lawley and Matt.
That was new Steelers center Mason Cole earlier today with Wes Euler and Tom Opferman. And he's a well-spoken young man.
Yeah.
So is Daniels. I think these guys are both very much in that offensive line leadership type guys.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, again, they've been around the league a little bit. Cole was a third-round pick of the Cardinals, then got traded to the Vikings for a sixth-round pick,
mm-hmm.
And then became a free agent. So, you know, there's a little bit of pedigree there. Of course, Daniels was a second-round pick.
Yeah.
So they've rebuilt this thing largely, you know, right now without any first-round picks. So it's similar to what they did in the early part, starting in 2010 with adding Marquise Pouncey in the first round and then DeCastro 2 years later and then Gilbert in the second round and things of that. But they're doing it without using those premium
not the
picks.
Premium picks. Yeah. And who knows? I mean, again, I've thrown this out there before. This week is maybe next year we look at their number one need as a tackle, and that's the completion of it all, and either Chooks or Green doesn't work out, or maybe they're one hole away from really having a big-time O-line 1 year from now. Yeah. Or maybe this is good enough, and you just keep reinforcing it with a third-round pick here and there and another free agent and things like that. Again, I think depth is really key. I think Daniels has a much higher ceiling than Cole, but I think Cole's going to be a serviceable player. Again, both were really well-spoken, outgoing. You could see some leadership traits. And, again, they have a lot of experience for being the age they are. I think Cole's a better run blocker than he is in protection. And I think they want guys coming off the ball.
Yeah. You know, I'm looking here at Football Outsiders and their adjusted line yards.
Okay.
Where everybody ranked last year. And, again, people were talking about the Steelers. Well, it's just Steelers' offensive line is the worst in the league. Here were the teams that were below them.
Okay, this is a running metric, right?
Yeah, this is the adjusted line yards. Steelers were 28th at 3.84 yards.
Mm-hmm. And if you go back 2 days ago, they had to face more stack boxes than most teams in the league, if not all. Right.
Baltimore was 29th at 3.82 yards.
Wow.
And that was Lamar played 12 games last year.
He did. And, frankly, Huntley wasn't terrible either.
Yeah.
You know, right.
Miami came in then at 3.81. Then you had the Giants at 3.74.
Let me stop you real quick, because I think truly Miami and the Giants are fighting hard to be the worst offensive line in the league.
Yeah.
Like, the Steelers were much better than those guys.
But last in the league was Houston at 3.33.
Which,
they were a full half a yard worse than the Steelers.
Yeah, and again, we talked to Little Houston earlier in the week. Tunsil's a good player, but the number, and I don't have the number, but the reflection that really shows how bad they were, first down runs were, like, historically bad.
Yeah.
You know, it's always second and nine.
This is another one that's surprising. So Cleveland led the league in adjusted line.
Did they? Okay.
Okay.
I guess I'll buy that, you know.
But they gave up 49 sacks.
Yeah. Wow. And they don't throw the ball a huge percentage of the time.
No, I mean, their adjusted sack rate was 8.7%, which...
Interesting.
The only ones worse than that were Chicago, Cincinnati, and then Cleveland. Then you had the Jets, Baltimore. So Baltimore was at the bottom of the runs stats and at the top of the sack.
Both bad, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. I wouldn't have lumped Baltimore with those O-lines as being horrible. I'm not picking on Al Villanueva, but he's been shot for a little while.
Yeah, and they had some other spots on that line that were guys in and out.
Yeah, and we've talked about this a couple times this week. I mean, Stanley is a crucial guy that they need for in Baltimore as much as anyone not named Lamar, really.
Yeah, and the Steelers were actually at the bottom of the list, towards the bottom of the list in the league at 5.6% in terms of their sack percentage. Mm-hmm. Now, some of that's because Roethlisberger was getting the ball so quick.
I would say Baltimore holds the ball a lot longer than the Steelers do.
Without a doubt.
They're both at the opposite ends of the
spectrum. But, I mean, it's the same thing. You know, Tampa Bay's line gets credit for, well, they don't give up many sacks. Well, Tom Brady, over the course of his career, has not taken many sacks.
No. Brady, remarkably, is not far off Ben in terms of getting the ball out quick, but also has one of the highest average depth of targets in the league, too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's hard to pull off. I mean, tip your cap to the TB12.
Well, he'll just throw to the out. You know, I'm just going to toss one up to this spot and let the guy go get it.
And he has receivers to do it, and he has the line to do it. I mean, Wirfs is one of the best linemen in the league. And he also has a high percentage of throws that are, boom, get him out. And when he takes his shots, he hits them.
The one that's really impressive on here to me is that Buffalo was second in adjusted sack yards, or sacks, 4.5%.
Really?
Give up 27 sacks last year with a quarterback who's a running quarterback.
Yeah.
Wants to hold the ball and stay, you know.
So you're saying they're second best?
Yeah.
Wow. That's interesting. I wonder, I mean, again, some of the, like all stats, some metrics can lie. I wonder, you know, like the Ravens were a heavily blitzed team, which you wouldn't think they were. I'd be real hesitant to blitz Allen and Mahomes. I wonder if they're at the bottom of the league. That's a wonderful stat you just showed, and I think it shows how good that team is in general. And their line's not great. It's fine. But I wonder, on average dropback, how many rushers do they face versus other teams? You know what I mean? That would be a nice correlation.
I would think
to
that
say,
Josh Allen gets spied quite a bit.
I would think gets spied quite a bit, and their receivers are dangerous, and if, you know, he's almost like an old-school Ben, but a better runner. If I blitz him and he shrugs off Devin Bush or some linebacker that he's bigger than, now I got less guys on the back end to deal with him, and he's off and running.
My 5'10" cornerback has to tackle.
Has to tackle this thoroughbred, you know, right. Yeah, best of luck with that. So it also shows Allen's development, too.
No, I think it does 100%, as well.
You know, just as a passer and as a quarterback.
Absolutely. You know, I look here at the teams that led the league – In sacks allowed. I mean, Chicago was by far at the top at 58%.
Was it 9 of them against the Browns in one game?
It might have been more than that.
Justin
Fields' first start was like 12 sacks or something
right,
like that.
Right, right, right.
And that just goes to show you how sacks are a quarterback.
Very much a quarterback stat.
Stat as much as anything else.
Mm-hmm. So Ben got the ball out very, very quick, but he also still had an advanced mind for knowing where the blitz was coming from. I wonder how that will change for the Steelers this year. And it almost doesn't matter to me which quarterback it is, although Pickett had the luxury, and I'm not even calling it a negative because he got away with it and he was one of the best quarterbacks in the nation last year, but he held the ball a very long time because he had a good O-line, he had a good scheme, and he had a dynamite receiver that he was able to hold the ball longer. He won't be able to hold it as long at the next level, but he's also a pretty good mind as rookies go. You know, like Mac Jones adjusted pretty well to pressures and, you know, not turning them into sacks. And that's another pro football focus thing is how many pressures turn into sacks.
Yeah.
You know, like pressures are going to come no matter what. And they even judge pass rushers that way. I mean, what percentage of TJ's pressures did he actually turn into sacks? You know, but who's defining pressure?
Right.
So many of these metrics are...
If I get within 3 yards of you, is that a pressure?
Right. I mean, so many of these metrics are defined differently, you know?
Right.
So, but they are interesting. You can learn a lot.
Just for people who are wondering, I just looked up the same stat here. In 2018 for the Bears, that was Mitch Trubisky's second year in the league. The most games that he started, or actually second most, he started 15 his next year. But he started 14 of the games for the Bears that year when he was healthy. And he was sacked just, where's that at? 33 times. The NFL average that year was 40.
Oh, okay.
So he wasn't holding on to the ball.
Not too bad. Okay. Yeah. I would have thought the opposite.
And he has the ability to escape some of the pressure.
Yeah, so. I would have thought young quarterback's going to process a little slower, and he's a big, strong guy that might be willing to take a hit to shrug somebody off if need be. I would have thought that number would have been higher.
Yeah, so interesting.
Yeah.
But Mason Cole, one of the big additions for the Steelers in this offseason. We're going to take another break. He is Matt Williamson. I am Dale Lally.
They would have killed for a Mason Cole last year.
Yes.
Like, I remember Kevin saying something like, I wish I'd have got one more veteran lineman, and I think that's him.
That's the guy.
Yeah.
We're going to take another break. He is Matt Williamson. I am Dale Lally. You're listening to The Drive here on Steelers Nation Radio. We're live from the UPMC Rooney Sports Complex here at Steeler OTAs, and we'll be back with more right after this. Welcome back. I'm Dale Lally here with Matt Williamson. We are live from Steelers OTA sessions here at the UPMC Rooney Sports Complex. And Matt, I was on Football Outsiders there for the last segment, so I thought I'd just look something up here.
Okay.
And I looked up where Ben Roethlisberger ranked last year in terms of quarterback DVOA and things of that nature
on the
Football Outsiders rankings here. So last year, Ben Roethlisberger, in terms of total DVOA, and that is their metrics that they use, he was 20.
Right.
He was 25th.
Okay.
He was 27th in QBR, which that's the
they steal that from ESPN.
That's the new ESPN ranking. Yeah. He was 16th in E yards. I'm not sure what E yards are.
E yards.
Table explain. I'm gonna look up E yards here. E yards are effective yards.
That's a new metric.
DVOA. That translate DVOA into yards per attempt figure.
Okay. I don't quite understand that, but fair enough.
Anyway,
combination of two stats.
Yeah. So there's this feeling that somehow the Steelers this year can't be better at quarterback than what they were last year.
Yeah, I don't understand.
And there
that
are
at
some
all, right.
things that I look at and say, okay, they're not going to have more fourth quarter comebacks this year than they
probably
were last
not.
Year.
There's two things to me that I think will be missed or lacking, and that's the biggest one, is when the chips are down and it's late in the game and Ben has been playing and has figured out the defense, he clearly did his best work. And another thing we mentioned, too, when we were talking about sacks taken, he's been on the block. I mean, there's not a blitz he hasn't seen or the tendencies that people give away.
He's played the Browns 100 times. They're not
sure.
going to throw anything new at him.
Yeah, and familiarity with weather and different stadiums and things like that that maybe the average fan doesn't think about. He's got that down. I mean, that's not going to be a problem at all. But I think there's a lot of areas of quarterback play that are going to improve.
Yeah. So what I did was I went back and looked at Mitch Trubisky's DVOA in 2018. That was the year he made the Pro Bowl, his first full season as a starter for the Bears. That was his year two for him.
Yeah.
And so that year, Mitch Trubisky, in terms of DVOA, was 19th in the league at 3.6%.
Yeah, you'll take that.
That was ahead of Kirk Cousins, ahead of Matthew Stafford. Ahead of
Lion at that point.
Ahead of Derek Carr.
Okay.
Ahead of Cam Newton, ahead of Eli Manning, Nick Foles, Dak Prescott, Marcus Mariota, Case Keenum, Alex Smith, Sam Darnold, Blake Bortles. I mean, they were the guys right ahead of him. Now, Nick Mullins was there.
Okay. I will say Niners quarterbacks always score really high on this, and that's a lot of its scheme. Jimmy's going to score better as a Niner than his next home.
Because he's going to be thrown to a lot of wide-open guys because everybody's selling
play out. Action, boom, he hits a guy in stride, and it helps the quarterback. Numbers.
So the DVOA was again, middle of the pack that year.
Yeah.
I'm going to look up his 2019. He started 15 games that year. Now, he had an injured shoulder that year.
Okay.
So that
is very relevant because he didn't run nearly as much as he would have.
He was essentially, injury. He was essentially Baker Mayfield in 2019.
He was
playing with
a
separated left shoulder. Well, that year he was 27th
in DVOA.
Yeah,
that adds up.
Okay. So then he comes back. They don't pick up his fifth year option. In 2020, his DVOA. He won the starting job coming out of training camp. Lost it in week three.
Okay.
Sat for, I think, four games or something like that, maybe four or five games.
Is that when Andy Dalton was there?
No, Nick Foles started
those games. Okay.
And then Trubisky came back and won the starting job back and was a starter the rest of the season, the final part of the season. I think he ended up starting maybe 11 games that year.
Okay.
And so his DVOA that year, where's he at here? Trubisky. Maybe he didn't have enough.
Maybe
passes.
He didn't have enough qualifications.
Oh no, there he is. He's 24th.
Okay.
So I've seen things this year thus far. Like, Pro Football Network put out a poll.
Didn't they do something today?
They did the top 32 quarterbacks in the league this year.
Okay. Yeah.
And had Trubisky at 31st.
Hmm.
He's never been 31st in DVOA in his entire career.
Right. I see.
27th was the lowest that he's been in a year in which he was hurt. The 2 years that he's the other 2 years he's been 19th and 24th. The last year Ben Roethlisberger was 25th.
Okay. So, I mean, I guess you can look at that a lot of different ways. Like I've been Chris Sims puts out his quarterback rankings too, and he puts them in five quarterback increments, starting with 30 down to 1. And I think he had Mitch like 25th-ish, something like that. But basically said, it wouldn't shock me at all if he's middle of the road. You know, if he learned a lot in Buffalo and looking at his traits, and if he's advanced in a few areas from his early time and he's in a better scheme and or people are helping him more, I would fully expect him to get to the middle of the road, which is where he was in that second year. His
right.
one-year starter, yeah. His only real healthy season to judge off of, and he was a younger guy then. Boy, you'd take that, though.
Oh, you'd absolutely
take that in a heartbeat.
That 2020 season,
mm-hmm.
The guys around him, the guy right ahead of him was Joe Burrow in his rookie season.
Okay.
He was 23rd in DVOA.
Yeah.
As much as everybody loved Joe Burrow that
sure,
rookie
sure.
year, he was
Then he got hurt.
Yeah, right after him was Mullins.
Okay. Very scheme driven.
Tua.
In his rookie year.
Yeah, in his rookie year. Gardner Minshew, who people wanted the Steelers to sell.
Yeah,
oh,
he
Gardner
came
Minshew,
in.
Gardner Minshew, you got to go get Gardner Minshew.
Same class. He came in and played well.
Drew Locke.
Wow.
Nick Foles, Andy Dalton, Cam Newton, Daniel Jones, Sam Darnold, Carson Wentz.
Wow.
Was all the way down at 34.
That was his last year in Philly, right?
Okay. Alex Smith and Dwayne Haskins.
Okay. Interesting.
Some of these guys are still in the league.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Some of these guys are starting quarterbacks still in the league.
But you want the company to be better than that.
Yes.
I mean, you know what I mean? Like, that. A lot of those guys were work in progresses and learning, and I'm sure Wilson, Lawrence, Fields were at the bottom of DVOA this past year. You know what I mean? So it's time to take a step past those guys than the prospects. We'll call them the prospects.
So in terms of DVOA last season, again, I mentioned that Ben Roethlisberger
was
25th.
Okay.
The guys ahead of him, Davis Mills.
Okay.
Actually, no, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's, I got that wrong. No, okay, DVOA. Davis Mills came in at minus 8.7. Baker Mayfield was minus 8. Tyler Heinicke was 22nd, minus 5.7. Matt Ryan was minus 4.3.
Well, the beginning of Ryan's season started really rough, too.
Jared Goff was minus 3.6.
Okay. See, I expect maybe not Ryan with the Colts. I would expect Trubisky. We're operating on the assumption Trubisky wins it, and we don't know if he will or not. To be better than that neighborhood.
Yeah,
I think he goes to the tier above that.
Lamar was minus 2.9. He was 19th.
Yeah, which is a little surprising.
Tua was 18th at minus 0.7. Jalen Hurts was 17th at minus 0.4.
Okay.
Carson Wentz was plus 1.8. He was 16th.
He had a better year than people think.
Josh Allen was 15th at 4.9. So Trubisky's 2018 season at plus, what did I say, 3.4?
Mm-hmm.
Would have come in right between Carson Wentz and Josh Allen.
As like the 16th ranked quarterback last year.
He'd have been the 16th ranked quarterback last year.
So
if he's that.
If he's that, you're in
good
shape.
That's a home run.
And again, and continues to look better as the season goes on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Not just, he had a couple good games here and there.
The other part of the equation is he sat last year.
Right.
He's completely healthy,
right. I'm sure his body's happy about
that. His body feels great.
Right. Spry and strong and, yeah. No, I think he's in a good spot to bring a lot more to the offense than what they had.
And he's 27.
Mm-hmm.
Going into age 28.
That's one of the things I liked about signing him.
For quarterbacks, that's a nice
I think he's getting to that point where the two axes meet, where your physicality, your skills decline, basically, you know, as you enter
probably
the league.
About 32 on.
Yeah, where your knowledge gains.
Yeah.
End of career Ben was a perfect example of the mind's there, but the body's not there anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of these guys in their prime are meshing those two right around 27, 28, and I think Trubisky's got a good chance to have both those two lines hit at the right point.
Yeah, I think it's going to it's a very very good signing in terms of that, and I don't think.
Life's an adventure, and it's waiting. Hi, this is Merrill Hodge. At S&T Bank, they know life's for the living. That's why S&T Bank offers solutions to help you get the most out of it. Whether you're investing in your home, planning for the future, or just making the most of every day, S&T Bank is here to help. Learn how S&T Bank can help you live the life you want at stbank.com. Member FDIC. S&T Bank was ranked number one in customer satisfaction with retail banking in Pennsylvania by J.D. Power. For J.D. Power 2022 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards.